if we are honest, in the future, the healthcare system will not take care of us. We need to take care of ourselves a little, and consumer health is a part of that. And there's so much discussion always that the monitoring tools that we have for health are not clinically validated. And I'm not sure if this is always a huge problem, if they help people to maybe start being healthier.
Welcome, everyone, to our second episode here at the Beyond Outcomes podcast. And today with me, I have Agnes Musial. Agnes, I have known you for several years, and whenever we bump into each other, it's quite a pleasure. And so I really enjoy the opportunity to sit down with you today and discuss about your journey, about Feel, about what it's like to be a founder in an industry where you have to overcome a lot of different challenges. talk about those today as well, and you know, get your insights and some inspirations out for the viewers out there.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here and share everything that you want to know.
Lovely. So why don't we start with you first? For the people out there that don't know you, and I think this might be less because you are so active on social media and conferences, at least everyone in the industry or a large proportion of the industry should know you already. But for everyone else out there, what should they know about you to understand, you know, where you are at the moment in terms of being a founder, you know, pushing the medical device industry forward, pushing our healthcare forward? What do they need to know about Agnes as a person?
About Agnes as a person, yeah. They need to know that I actually never thought of being a founder. So my journey, or when I was young at school, I remember very well that I got very interested in research. So we had biology classes, human biology, and I was so obsessed with all that stuff. Getting to know more about the body and the molecular biology, really, what's happening inside our body, what makes diseases work, how do we stay healthy? And I thought, wow, that's what I want to do. I want to know more about the body, and I do not want to learn only from books, but I want to be the one that actually does the research on that. And I got pretty excited in school about being a big researcher and a professor at university in healthcare. And when I actually reached university, it was like falling into reality, like, okay, that's not at all what I was expecting. And it's all about papers and publishing and all about the wrong stuff. So it was not at all what I imagined. And so I did my PhD, but left pretty quickly and went into clinical research because I thought, okay, that will be the field where I can do actually that and do all the innovations and push them into the market and do great stuff for the health. And to be honest, it was the second time that I fell into my nose, I would say, because reality also was different. It was that during my time, I saw a lot that our healthcare system is going downwards. Everyone knows about it. And at the same time, we have a lot of innovators and great ideas, but no one really gives them a hand and pushes them that these innovations actually reach the market. And yeah, that's when I was very frustrated with all that. I met my co-founder and I thought, like, okay, if I don't like what's happening out there, I have to change it on my own. And that's how I got to be a founder, and that's where I really found my passion. I would have never thought that I would be a founder one day and do really all those innovations, because I always thought, like, how are people doing that? How are they having those great ideas, and where do they get the energy from to actually do that? Now I'm doing it on my own, so it's really crazy.
So where do you get the energy from? Or knowing that you always questioned whether this was for you or it didn't occur to you, what made you push through that resistance, thinking like, oh my God, it's going to be so difficult for me to have the ideas, execute them, push in all the energy? Or did you just feel like, no, this is right, the problem is big enough for me to tackle it?
Actually didn't really think about it. I mean, it was a lot that, as I said, I was very frustrated also in clinical research at that point, because it's so a lot about bureaucracy. So a lot of just documenting stuff and sticking to the regulations, which is very important, but you don't really have time for the stuff that is important, which is the patients in the end. We want to improve healthcare. And that's when the opportunity came that I met my co-founder, actually. I offered him my help back then because I always knew that for founders, it is really hard to tackle the whole clinical research part, the whole regulations part. And I always offered my hand to those that needed it. And he said, yeah, you can help me by doing this with me. And I actually didn't think about it a second. I didn't think about any challenges or thinking that I have a secure job, a good job, that I just stop doing and do something that is very risky. That wasn't a problem for me or any thought, because I thought that's absolutely something I want to do now, and I just jumped into it.
I mean, it's courageous, but sometimes not even sometimes. It feels like that's what you have to do, because if you think about all the things that could go wrong, you will never start.
Yeah.
And it's great that you found the courage to just say like, nah, screw it. I will jump head first, and here we are. You are a founder. You have, inspired. I'm sure you have inspired many people already through your journey and just moving forward. I'm happy to connect to all of these points today as well. But let me jump in once before, because you mentioned your interest already started in school, and I was wondering whether it was you feel from your point that you had that interest, or was it also driven by a teacher that you had that was particularly good in evoking an interest in that field?
Funnily, not at all by the teacher, because the teacher was really not a good teacher. None of the biology teachers, sorry for that, but they weren't all not interested in giving you the spark to be interested in the field. So it was actually more me, because I was simply interested in the human biology part. And maybe also, so from my father's side of the family, there are some people that had jobs in the medical field. And my father always said he always also wanted to do this, but he's an engineer. Here maybe some things come together now.
Yeah.
But so it was simply my interest. It was had nothing to do with school, unfortunately, because I think if we have the spark for especially things like biology or chemistry already in school, that would help a lot. That also more women move to the field.
Absolutely. Sad to hear that you didn't have a good teacher, because I think they can always have a very nice influence, but it's great to hear that you had the passion to still push through it. Yeah. So fast forwarding now to where we are today. So can you give us a little bit of a rundown of let's say the inception of Field. How did you meet your co-founder? What was the initial, let's say, idea or problem that was proposed to you that you said, I have to jump in head first and take that on, make it my own? How did that come about?
So I come from Osnabrück, and there we have the Osnabrück Healthcare Accelerator. So it's an accelerator for startups in the healthcare field. And when it started in Osnabrück, I was pretty interested in that, of course, because I always wanted to help startups to really make it into healthcare. And so I got into contact very early. And my co-founder actually was in the second batch of this healthcare accelerator with the idea of Feel. And I went to an event where there was a pitching contest, and he pitched the idea. And I thought, wow, it's really such a great idea. It could move so much in healthcare. And that's where I went to him and said, hey, how can I help you? And that's how we met. And it's like we always say, by chance. But maybe in the end was destiny, because it's really he brings all the technical knowledge and everything around the development of the device itself, about the technology. And I bring in everything else, I would say. So from the medical side, the regulation side. And together for this journey, it's a great team. And it was just luck, maybe. Sometimes you need to be lucky.
Well, I mean, both of you sought out an opportunity for this to happen, you know, because you need to be brave and pitch. Well, anyway, you have to be as a startup. That's what it's all about. And at the same time, you looked for an opportunity to help, and you went to an event where there was a possibility for it to happen. So yeah, it's lovely when there are local events which are organized around that. And the startup scene, I guess, is hard enough. So it's great if there is a supporting network that shows, you know, that makes the first steps easier, because we need that innovation. So, talking about fear, can you give us, and especially also the audience, a rundown of what exactly your device is intended to do, and what's sort of like the journey you've been on with it? Like, what was the inception idea, and what is it now, or where do you want to take it to?
Yeah, so the main idea is our healthcare today is based on snapshots, we always say. So it's snapshot diagnostics. Mm-hmm. There are always like a picture of yourself when you go to the doctor. So there is, for example, lab values that is just a moment of yourself. But that's actually absurd, because biology is dynamic. So there is always happening something in our body. So only to have these snapshots all over our healthcare system, which are very often also not even connected to each other, it's just crazy. And my co-founder saw the opportunity that he was developing sensors actually in the beginning in another field, in automotive. And he said, okay, in automotive makes sense, but how much sense would it make if we use sensors on the body? That really, like when you get into a car, you have a big dashboard that shows you everything about the car. So why don't we have that for ourselves? And yeah, that's the main idea, to really not do only snapshots diagnostic if we don't feel well, for example, because then it's already too late. But to have technology that supports us, that directly detect if something is going wrong in your body, to stop it from happening even. So that's the main idea and the main driver of the whole story. And so we developed these devices that, from the principle, many know from the CGM, so continuous glucose monitors, they continuously monitor the glucose levels, which is great, but doesn't really help healthy persons, even if there are a lot of people claiming that, but I would be very cautious with that. What we do is to use more than one parameter, many parameters combined in one device, to do different monitoring opportunities. For example, if someone is already chronically ill, those are the persons that have the most need. So they get a supporter that track their parameters all the time. It's like a supporter that says, oh, now you need to be cautious and talk to a doctor, for example, because something is starting to be wrong in your body. And that device can not only tell you that, but also directly get in touch with your doctor and say, here are the values. Let's start something that it doesn't get worse, for example.
So how does that work on a technical level, for maybe not too detailed, because it might be too complex, but at the end of the day, in a car, I think intuitively you can understand that we are talking about, like, sure, you have sensors everywhere, but it's an electric signal, it gets transferred, it moves into the dashboard, but it's, you can't really put like five different sensors, like, you know, a tire pressure sensor, you can't put into your arm, or you don't, at least, or maybe you do. So what's the level of information your device can access, and how do you translate this into something that your device can actually pick up and then make useful for the person that's wearing the badge?
Yeah, I always say we translate the molecular language of our bodies. So we actually measure parameters like, for example, sodium or potassium. Or also troponin, which is very important for people that are prone to a heart attack or something, lactate levels. So really molecular language of the body. We do this either in the sweat, so being non-invasive, or in the interstitial fluid. That's what also the continuous glucose monitors do, or even in the capillary blood. And yeah, there we have different kind of biochemical sensors, really. So sensing systems that have a biological component on top. Catcher systems, for example, that catch the specific molecules from the blood. And then we can translate it into a concentration. And of course, we already know the concentrations that are healthy. We also know the concentrations that are not healthy. what we actually don't know today and what our device helps with is how do these parameters really develop over time. Mm-hmm. So what are their dynamics? So that's something completely new. That is information we don't have right now in our healthcare system. And we are very sure that it will open up so many different possibilities and knowledge to us, where we can see things that we maybe at the moment can't even imagine, because we already see it from the CGM that you can translate a lot of things just simply from this glucose levels. So what can you translate if you see other parameters as well all the time?
Mm-hmm. And did you come to the, let's say, conclusion that these are the key parameters you should measure based on established technology, ease of measurement, or because you said these are key parameters where, let's say, a scientific link between, let's say, changes over time and certain health statuses coming. So was the medicine there or the technology the first piece?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I have to say it depends. So our system, we call ourselves architects of the smart patches because we have built like a house. Mm-hmm. That is always the same for these technologies. The inside is always different, and that is the sensors. So the heart of it are the sensors that you can exchange depending on what you want to monitor. For example, chronically ill patients with heart failure need certain parameters. Like there, it is important to have potassium because it's very important for the heart. NT-proBNP is like a marker for heart failure. We have lactate there. So these are very specific for this use case. But then you can have, for example, early detection of sepsis in the hospital. Then lactate is also a very important parameter. Or you just have a look at your metabolism. Then, of course, very different parameters are there. And so we don't have specific parameters that we say everyone needs that right now. But it's really specific for every individual what their needs are just right now. And for the parameters, there is, of course, a lot of research already, but it really depends on the case. For some parameters, we have a lot of data. What, of course, is very much in the focus right now are hormones, and especially female hormone monitoring. Of course, hormones are the, I would say, the thing everyone wants to measure because they are so dynamic. And right now, we don't have a possibility to measure them continuously and to really see how do they develop and how is really my personal level. So it might be very different between one another, what is normal and what actually is something that we need to act on. So in the end, I have to be honest that we have to learn from all the data first before we can make real insights possible for everyone.
Yeah, it's going to be challenging because at the end of the day, this is a very long-term shot also. You need to measure and then you need to see, well, having measured all of this, now there's an event. What if no event occurs? Like what differentiates a person that has an event in the run-up versus a person that does not have an event? I mean, that's at the end of the day where you create a foundation for future lessons being learned or preventive measures being had. Do you see, with that in mind, your device as something that lays a foundation for a certain level of research, medical research to be done on it, or already as a preventive device? Or is this just a future evolution that your device would undergo?
It's both. So I think research will have a lot of interest in that and should have a lot of interest in that, because it's actually the first time that we can have this real world data that everyone is talking about. Everyone is talking about nowadays about real world data collection, and there is no possibility to collect them really. And I think it will have a huge, huge impact on what we know about the body and also change our healthcare in that way that at the moment, everyone is handled like everyone else. So there's no individuality. And with our device, it will be possible that you have a personalized level about everything. And then we will really see what is the real difference between females and males, because that's, of course, a big thing. We will also see the difference between people. And you will not only get, for example, for your whole, how you handle your health, how you eat, how you do sports. You will not get just very general advice, but your advice will be very personal and directly fit to yourself, and that will change a lot, I think.
Mm. So it seems to me that you're sort of, and I would love to get your perspective, and it's stuck between a desire to use your data to advance the science and also at the same time developing a product. How do you balance those two?
Yeah, that is hard. It's yes. Very hard, especially because as a founder, you also need, of course, investors. For example, you cannot catch an investor with that you want to do something good to the world. That's, we have to be honest, it simply doesn't work. Right. So we also have to generate money. Mm. And but we still try to do this with cases where we really support the people, and it's not just about making money. Because, for example, we can easily go to the biohacker scene and give them all the parameters that we have right now to track, but it doesn't make sense. So, but we could have a lot of money from that. But so we start with cases where we know we can help the people. For example, we have a combination of sensors that we can use for hydration, for example, and that is something that is important to help to the health that we cannot access at the moment, really, and that we can help the people with, and also already generate money in an early stage of the company that will help the rest of the company grow.
Mm-hmm. And so if at the position where you are at now, What is the influx of data that you get? Because at the end of the day, I mean, I'm sure you have and are using your product, your device, other friends and family to gather like some information, and whoever's willing to. And there are plenty of them. But at the end of the day, it's sort of like, how do you and do you get like a stream of information to form the basis of, well, assessing what you're device where it's currently at, and also to lay the data foundation for further research? What is your approach?
That's what we're doing right now. So we do some cooperations with university clinics, for example, also to start some studies, especially in sweat monitoring, because sweat monitoring is something that is really starting to appear right now. Because until now, we didn't really have a possibility, once again, to measure things from sweat. We had the possibility to do the lab testing with blood. Then you don't use the sweat. Why should you use sweat when you can do blood testing? Yeah. Mm. But now when you do continuous measurements, of course, it's a lot easier if you just put something on the body and don't have to go inside. Mm-hmm. And there is also a lot of health information that we can access there. Mm. And of course, university clinics are interested also to learn from that. That's a good thing for us, because they are eager to work with us to do some testing on their patients. And often, because this is non-invasive, now we are going a little bit into regulation, we have the opportunity to say, okay, it's just something we can add to the patients during their hospital stays, because it's non-invasive, it doesn't do them any harm, and it's a lot easier than anything that starts with needles or going inside the body. So that's where we get some information, and we do a lot of self-testing, to be honest, so put things on ourselves, test our sensors directly in the lab. We don't only test them continuously, but also do some validation studies with university clinics where they do the sampling of patients, and there's always blood remaining, and that can be tested with our sensors to see how accurate are they, how well do they fit the lab testing. So we take everything that we can and put them together. And to be honest, of course, AI is helping us now a lot to do analysis on that. Because I think before AI, it was a lot harder for a startup to have a lot of people that work on all the analysis. And now we can do a lot on our own. That's good.
Yeah. I mean, it's great that you have those collaborations. Did you start? I'm sure you have to start somewhere in the lab in assessing, let's say, reference ranges. Is it even measuring accordingly? Yeah. And then you basically move that to, let's say, real life sampling from maybe leftover samples and then to inpatients. Did you see any difference there also, because you're patch sort of creates a micro environment at the end of the day? Do you feel like that has an influence in the way that you sample on the sample itself? Is this something that you needed to recalibrate your device to? Let's say if you're sweating and you have a patch here, yeah. Or if you draw, you know, interstitial fluid, does that change the composition of the interstitial fluid or the sweat if it's under a patch? Was this a harder transition for you moving from the lab to real world?
It's always a hard transition, but in the end it's not shocking you, because you know that of course when you develop you have to think about the real world use from the beginning, mm-hmm. and then you know that it is hard to sample sweat, for example, because mm-hmm. people right. sweat very differently. So you might have to need to have a method that induces the sweat, but if you induce the sweat, it's the level of the parameter then still right, and that is definitely not something that you get into when you do the real world testing. That mm-hmm. is something you do from the beginning when you develop the whole device. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of technology, of course, inside for sweat, the microfluidics and everything. Mm-hmm. So the challenge doesn't come when you move to the patient. In terms of the technology, because you see a lot of issues that you were expecting, that you maybe need to change a little mm-hmm, bit mm-hmm. in your techniques. But the bigger challenges are often you think about how the patient uses the device, and right. then the patient uses it very differently. So it's mostly something like that that makes it hard afterwards. Yeah.
Okay. Since we talk so much about the device, you have a sample device with you.
Yeah.
Could we have a look at it and you run this down a little bit and also how to use it?
Yeah, we can. Maybe I can turn quickly in the camera.
Yeah.
Because I'm wearing one, it's always the best.
Yeah.
Now I'm taking out the microphone, but here you can see that is the mm-hmm. current model.
Yeah.
And I have some other device with me because we are more focused on research and everything here. Because we are also doing something very different. So I already said that we are working on a platform system, mm-hmm. because in the heart of it, there is always the sensors. Mm-hmm. And if you exchange a sensor, you can have a very different product, but mm-hmm. everything else stays the same.
Right.
And the problem with sensors at the moment is a lot that we have so many sensors in research that right. work well, but where are the products? So
right.
everyone asks what is happening. And a lot is the problem that the optimizing for wearing on the body, that takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So we are taking that away. And also what takes a lot of time is to get the sensor running long time. So a lot of sensors work, but only for a few hours, mm-hmm. because then maybe the sensor is saturated. There is no, we call it refreshing system, mm-hmm. where the catcher system that catches the mm-hmm. analyte also mm-hmm. releases it again. So these are challenges that we work on a lot, but then it takes a lot of time for the sensor to reach the market because of
right.
that. And we have a platform system here. So generally in our device, we have a reusable electronics, because of course, we also need to have less waste in mm-hmm. our medical systems. So the reusable, which is demonstrated here, that's the electronics, can mm-hmm. be recharged and reused. And this is our research system. It's a system where you can also measure either in the sweat, interstitial fluid, or in capillary blood, mm-hmm. Which is put on the body. And the sensors are actually integrated on the card. It's like an SD card that you can take out mm-hmm. when the sensors are saturated. Mm-hmm. It is still on the body and can take a new one and put it in. And that's how we bridge this problem, that the sensors mm-hmm. have still to be optimized, and they mm-hmm. still can, but we can already do clinical studies. That is mm-hmm. why we also want to have this really CE mark, the whole mm-hmm. system, that you can do it as a research system that brings this technology quicker to the body. Because
right.
the problem also with sensors is, you don't know if you have chosen the right parameters for the thing you want or the disease you want to monitor. Mm-hmm. Might be completely wrong ones, but how do you find out? You need to measure them on the body.
Mm.
And with this device, you can. And then this also takes away a little bit the risk from developing these devices by simply chose the wrong parameters. Then it looks like that. I mean, this one is a little bulky, we always say, but because it's for research
right.
use.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one looks a little bit different. I also have another version for sweat monitoring here. You see, we develop a lot of versions. That also shows the electronics that is reusable. Mm-hmm. And then we have a magnetic system that puts it into the patch. And then it looks like that in a mm-hmm. product. So it's, you see, It's not that bulky. It's very flexible. It feels good because it's, of course, very important that it feels good on the body, because no one will wear it if it's very bulky and doesn't feel good. Yeah,
that's true. Okay, and basically, from a content perspective, these two are similar. So where is where is, let's say, the SD card piece of this? Where do you exchange the sensors? Is this now all integrated into the magnetic cap?
Yeah, it is all in this disposable part. Yeah, okay, so this one is for sweat monitoring. Mm-hmm. Here you see another thing that we do. This is sensors that are put on this in a sticker form. That goes very deep into the problems of development and so on. But the sensor is actually a part that you can take off and on. Which is great for prototyping and everything. Right. But here, the sensors are directly here. It's not so much difficult about microfluidics and so on, because it's an easy testing device. And so in this part, everything is integrated here in this very flexible and thin part. Yeah.
That's very nice. And it's great to hear that you designed it in a way that acknowledges both, let's say, product limitations, but also then integrates the solution in a way that is very feasible to be used in, actually from a patient perspective as well. Yeah. Because it looks easy enough. If I can do this at home, then it becomes useful. If I need to go to a doctor to have something exchanged, then it loses its purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, we'll just...
Very nice.
Yeah, it's very important to think about these things from the beginning, because also another thing that we talk about a lot is design to cost, because we have a lot of research institutes that have fancy great things that we can never translate, unfortunately, into the real world, because they are simply too expensive. So it's very important to think about these things from the beginning. We can do great things and very accurate monitoring and everything, but you can never use it because it's simply too expensive.
Right. I think this touches on a very interesting topic. It's sort of the balance that you have to strike also between sort of like speed of innovation, but then also the need to really have reliable and robust information at the end of the day. And, you know, you have to weigh both against one another, and you already highlighted how many branches of development you tackle yourself. How do you approach that topic? And where, having developed so many different products or product types, how did you decide in terms of where do you need to collect evidence first to push it forward?
That's a really difficult question. So, you do it on the go a lot. And I have to be honest that it's also sometimes changing quickly according to how the developments are on the market internationally, if there is money available or not. So as a startup, I think everyone knows you have to adjust quickly always. And things can change a lot. But what I learned is you get a lot of feedback also from investors or users, and which is very important. You always have to take that seriously. But also you need to stick to your own aim and be true to yourself. What is your opinion and what you want to do? Because the best founders and the biggest companies that we know the stories that there was always someone in the beginning telling them, you will never make it, because that's simply either something no one wants or it's too difficult. Right. And this too difficult is something that every founder is, I think, more motivated by. If someone tells you that's too difficult to do, then you say, I will show you that it's possible. And so the most important part is always, there are a lot of hurdles if it's about money or technology or whatever, but we shouldn't think about the hurdles. We should think about the chances that it gives us and how we can tackle them, and not to be focused too much on what is not possible, because then you will never make it.
Right. I mean, you're venturing into a sort of unexplored or not fully unexplored. You know, you highlighted already continuous glucose monitoring before, but in the, you know, width of biomarkers you want to collect and the level of insights you want to draw from them, what's the market pressure there for you? Because at the end of the day, that's one of the things where you catalyze a lot of startups, when it says, well, we need to find our niche, plant our foot. But it's, if it's an open space for you, how is like, are other companies developing products in that space? And does that sometimes sway you off a certain path because you say, okay, well, we are more advanced in this space, so we should focus there?
Yeah, that's a good thing, because I always say there are no competitors in this field, because we all are working on a field that is just appearing. It's very new. And from everything that I told you right now, I think you can imagine that this field is so big that there can be a lot of people working on it. Mm-hmm. And the important part is that we finally bring it to the market. That's the goal for everyone. Mm-hmm. And we can rather help each other or stand in each other's way. If we stand in each other's way, then everyone will need a lot more time to reach the market. If we help each other, we will be quicker. And there is enough space for everyone on this market. And there are big players, of course, interested in that field. I wouldn't say working so much on it themselves, also working on it, but not with that much energy that people sometimes imagine, because we hear a lot, there are so big players. You want to compete with Abbott? And say, I'm not competing with Abbott, because I don't think Abbott is doing the same that we are doing. Yeah. So for me, it's not competition. It's good if they are doing something. Right. There are also several startups, not that many, and a little bit all over the world, I would say, that are working on continuous monitoring solutions, but none of the companies are doing exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And this is also why I say enough space for everyone. And I am actually happy if someone reaches the market before us, because you need to build the market, and that will be hard enough to also convince people. Mm-hmm. Technology can be so great, but still people need to be convinced to use it. And so there is competition, but that's absolutely nothing I'm afraid of, because enough space for everyone.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, what you and what we all need is to translate the data that you're gathering into actions and into health outcomes. Yeah. And if you have more players exploring that space, it means that advancements in understanding what these biomarkers even mean will benefit you also, because it means the knowledge gained from your device leads to better, more actionable outcome for patients that use it.
Yeah, I hope so. That's also kind of a problem that I see, because that is so valuable data that is generated here. Mm-hmm. And companies, of course, know this, and then would benefit, in my view, humanity a lot. But these data will be kept by certain companies. Imagine if you would just put all the data together and learn from it. That would be so great. But we know that will be rather difficult, unfortunately.
Yeah, too many commercial interests that compete with that. Yeah. In the development of the different types of device that you have here, what was, or the general development journey, what from your perspective was the most difficult or complex piece? Or is this really hard to say, because it changes from week to week?
It is really hard to say. I think every part for itself is complex. Of course, the development somehow is complex. For example, if you just look at the sensors, what comes together is biology, chemistry, physics, electronics, the data, algorithms. So many people need to actually sit together and talk about the issues that we have in development, because only one person cannot find out what is the problem. It's always that we are sitting together in a group if something doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And that is complex, but I don't see it as a problem. What still is a huge hurdle is financing things like that, because we still have a very, very big valley of death, where you have a lot of research funding, so much money going into this basic research. And then when it starts to be a product, there is no funding at all, because the way to the final product is so long. Right. And there is not enough funding, especially in Europe. Especially in Germany, it is very hard, because the risk is too high, and risky things in Germany are very hard topic. Yeah. So I think for me, it's still that the funding is simply stopping us from moving quicker. So we decided a long time ago that we do not invest so much time in funding. we would be quicker with the funding, but it takes so much time away from us and actually also nerves away from us, maybe, that we said, okay, we will be not that quick if we do it on our own, and also with bigger technology partners, we will go step by step. But in the end, it's a strategy that feels a lot better.
So when you talk especially about the risk and the long development cycles, you touched upon it earlier in your clinical research days. One of the elements that you really disliked or struggled with, of course, I think we all can acknowledge the importance, but regulations really make our life sometimes a little bit difficult. And now in Europe, we had a lot of changes in the last five, 6 years. How did you perceive the regulatory landscape now from a founder perspective compared to your, you know, clinical research experience before? Were there big differences, or are there things that annoy you more now? Or like, what's your perception there? And is this, at the end of the day, if we look at the big picture, the important piece is still patient health that should be ensured in trials and outside.
Yeah.
Is the trade-off still right? Is it balanced at the moment?
I don't think so at all. So sometimes it's also, again, a German problem, I think. German Angst, I always call it, because we talk so much about patient safety. But we are taking away the patient safety, I think, by stopping all this innovation from moving forward. That's what no one thinks about, because we... it's too short-sighted often, and the regulations also, when you talk to BfArM and so on, it's always, yeah, but we need to the patients to keep the patient safe. Yeah, but we are not keeping the patient safe because we are stopping this very important technologies from moving forward. And that's a little bit what's changed in my view. And also what I also always struggle with is that we need to talk to patients and work with patients as early on as possible. And regulations are now currently kind of stopping that, because you always need the whole documentation, everything ready to really go into the trials. And that is difficult. So there should be a possibility, if we can show that everything is at least safe for the patient, that we can work with clinics to start some testing and going deeper into research. That is... it is, even for me, coming from research, sometimes so complicated to really find a smart way how to do this. That is too difficult. And I think there should also be more coming from the regulation side, offering a hand to those technologies, because everyone, we all want to keep our health system running. And we shouldn't have so much look on that we... keep all the regulations in line, but maybe be smart. And how can we do this that it benefits both sides?
And you stuck with Germany. We are happy, very happy with it. I think it's great for our let's say startup community, for our ecosystem, and development in Germany are generally good. Was there at any point a consideration of saying that maybe we should take this somewhere else because environments are easier from a regulatory and from a funding perspective? And why are you still here?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a lot of times we thought, even especially when we went to the US, we were in San Francisco, and when you are in the Silicon Valley, you definitely don't want to come back because it's just so different. And a similar feeling when we went to Qatar, actually, which is not a country I would go to just because of other things. But from the mindset, it was so crazy because they think so quickly, they are so innovative, and they also look at the positive sides. They see the problems, absolutely, and they show them to you directly, but they also offer a perspective how we can work to circumvent that. Yeah? So they are always looking at the aim, and in Germany, that's still a big problem. And we were definitely, because of that, thinking to go somewhere else. But also from the beginning, we wanted to have our business in Germany. So we wanted to make Germany strong again, because in Germany, a lot of ideas originate from here. Yeah. So we still have our engineers are world class. Everyone says that, but they are leaving with their ideas because we are making it so hard. Right. But running away is not always the right way. So sometimes you need to push your country that maybe just the art of thinking changes. And that's what we try to do. So there could be a lot easier way to do this, but we really want to show Germany can do that too.
Now, you are a very public and outspoken person. You appear on a lot of conferences and a lot of panels. Did you already feel like there was some resonance of the messages that you spread over the difficulty? Like, are there regulators that you feel are really willing to discuss? And if so, what do you think is the biggest hurdle that it seems to need to be overcome first for actual change and positive, let's say, expedition of research?
Yeah, so absolutely. I feel a change, especially in the last half year. I wouldn't just say in Germany, but so in Europe at all. First of all, in the healthcare system, that we had a lot of talk about it, that it needs to change. We need to have more digitalization. We need to move from the snapshot diagnostics. And now I feel that the talk is really going into action. When you go to conferences, you really feel. I was in the health tech conference in Basel, and there was a whole part where we talked about preventive health. And all the speakers we were for didn't talk before about the topic, but everything went exactly in the same direction. The four speakers were so different. So it was a speaker from Roche. There was something from someone from the Netherlands who has a focus on innovation and what is really possible, proves it scientifically. And really, each and every talk was exactly the same from the story, which showed, okay, people are thinking in the same direction. And also people start to talk to each other and not stand in each other's way, because every company wants to be first. And now it starts more to be like, okay, we have a big problem in healthcare and we need to solve it kind of together. And that's really starting to change. And I think regulators are always starting to catch up. I think also that in the US it works a lot better. So the FDA is doing a good job in having open eyes for everything. Also seeing that consumer healthcare is not a beast and the enemy, but it's something that we actually need, because if we are honest, in the future, the healthcare system will not take care of us. We need to take care of ourselves a little, and consumer health is a part of that. And there's so much discussion always that the monitoring tools that we have for health are not clinically validated. And I'm not sure if this is always a huge problem, if they help people to maybe start being healthier, if not everything is very exact, but just giving a general overview of your health can also already be enough. If it shows you, if you go to a party and drink and your values are very, very bad on the next day. I mean, everyone knows this, but when you see it yourself, it can have a very different effect. So I think we need to be open, not always to be that strict about everything needs to be so regulated and validated and everything, but we need things that help people be healthier, and not only real tools from healthcare can do that.
So I think that brings us into a sort of like an edge case of medicine, which is sort of like the consumer wellness products, which are at times really bordering medical devices. Where do you see the distinction between the two? And what's your perspective sort of like on the regulatory opinion of it? Because it feels like this is being sharpened a bit more, because these sort of shadow medical devices I think seen a little bit more critically and pursued more proactively now by regulators. So how do you see that space from your perspective?
I'm not sure if I see a distinction. It's once again, I want to have a benefit from that. And so if they come to closer together, it's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. And it's once again that a lot of people they fear these devices. So I've been recently to a conference where someone that does a lot of research on sleep, I think, felt intimidated by those devices and explained why they are not as good as a sleep lab. I mean, that's obvious and it doesn't want to be a sleep lab. Mm. It is a tool that should help people be healthier. So it is a lot about fear of the old medical devices that mm. think, okay, we are pushed out of the market and that's why we need to say that it's not good enough. It's always the fear that is driving us to do those negative opinions. Of course, still, I think also these devices overpromise. We know that, especially in the US, that is a thing. We are not in Germany, we are not that overpromising. Mm-hmm. But in the US, that's a thing of startups to be the biggest and the newest. Mm-hmm. And that is a problem. I also don't like that. I've been to conferences where, for example, the CEO of Aura was talking and everything he said was absolutely right, but it made an impression that mm-hmm. this is a lot bigger than he's telling, because mm-hmm. you could understand the words two ways. For yeah. example, the Aura, of course, it can say there's a symptom detection when you get sick. I have an Aura myself, mm-hmm. so I know it works. So it sees when you're already ill. It tells mm-hmm. you, okay, maybe slow down and you will not be sick for so long when mm. you have an infection. That is, of course, not real prevention, to be honest. But they sell it as a big preventive thing, yeah? But that helps a lot still. What we are doing is, of course, then detect something in your molecular language very early and stop it from happening. So this overpromising is hard, but unfortunately, sometimes as a startup, you need to be overpromising, otherwise you will not make your way. And that's mm-hmm. the thing I would really love to change, but I don't think I will be no. be able to.
Yeah, it's difficult. And I mean, I get it. I also have a ring that tracks a lot of things, and then it tells me like, yeah, 6 out of 8 of your vital parameters are fine. So slow down a little bit. Okay, it's the first indication. This is not a medical device. This is just a wellness product. And drawing a line there and saying that, well, you know, when does it become a recommendation to go to a doctor because, you know, 2 out of 8 of your vital parameters are only well. This is a question that needs to be addressed. We need to have a clear structure here, because otherwise you blur the lines and you will have people always pushing for the easiest pathway. And the easiest pathway is not a regulated medical device, wellness product, but make the sort of like give the promises of a medical device of actionable. And as a consumer, it gets really difficult. Yeah. You know, you get an, I don't know, I mean, Apple Watch is maybe not the right, because, you know, they have certified a lot of medical device as well elements, but you get a watch, you get a lot of promises, you get a watch from another supplier. How do you know that one is a certified medical device and then the other one has a CE certificate because it's around some consumer electronics, which also needs, you know, a European declaration? Yes. And I think for a consumer, this gets really tricky, really fast.
Yeah, that is true. But also, I think the problem is, once again, financing, because right. as a startup, you are actually pushed to enter the wellness market. Because yeah. when you can, faster. They want to see that there is some money and they actually mm. push you towards mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. doing mm-hmm. this. It's a reality we face too. We would love to start with a medical device. Right. And if it takes time, it takes time. But mm-hmm. reality is, you are not able to. And I think all the devices that we see, if it's a Whoop, an Aura or mm-hmm. something, they try to really build a health infrastructure for the people and mm-hmm. not for the healthcare system that can support these people. And we have to be honest, it takes time also to learn from this data, because how should these companies tell you what that really means for you? Because these are also data we need to have the time to learn from them, to do the studies. Right. They're also all doing clinical studies for different parts. So we need to let them. It's not that they don't want to. It's they want to, but they also need the time to do this.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, it's the faster you're to the market, the more innovation you can push out, the better. Of course, from a company perspective, from yeah. a financial perspective. Yeah, and then the question is, how reliable are the new features, especially if we talk about big brands? If a big brand that has some certified, validated features pushes out a new and more experimental feature, but this is more in the, you know, wellness space, they don't make a big declaration. As you said, you promise a lot, because that's easy to get.
I mean, it depends. If I only have experience with the Aura ring, but there is an Aura Labs. So when there is a new feature, it is in the Aura Labs, you can use it. You don't have to. You have to do mm-hmm. a mark mm-hmm. that you say, okay, I want to be a tester.
Yeah.
And they test it a lot before they really say, okay, now it's an official feature. So, yeah, of course, it depends. But I think these companies, they are doing a good job. Still, they are over-promising.
Yeah, that's the direction. Yeah. So, if you look at it from a patient perspective, do you feel that, like, I think there are two facades to your positioning, the positioning of other, let's say, healthcare wellness, let's say medical devices that measure a lot of your biomarkers and make them available to you. And on one side, it sort of like empowers you as a person because you learn more about your body, also more continuously. And that gives you more power over controlling your own life and maybe also more incentives. On the other side, sometimes it can feel like it puts a lot of pressure on you because now technically you can measure 10, 15, 20, whatever parameters. You have six parameters probably on your sleep. How deep was it? Was your REM? How often did you wake up or not? This and that, which all could lead to one form or another to advice on what you could do better, which puts a lot of pressure on you on like biohacking and optimization. How do you see that both as someone that's working in that environment and as a human being, like in the entire biohacking, you know, biosensing, longevity sphere? Where's the line? Is there a line? It's a more philosophical question, but
yeah, it's a difficult question. So what I see also a lot is that people start using, for example, the Ring or Whoop or whatever, and get a little bit too crazy about it, start self-optimizing, and after a while they just put it away and say, now I'm a lot happier. But they have also learned a lot over the time, of course. You shouldn't forget that maybe they changed some things, and of course now they can also be better. It's difficult. I think we shouldn't over-optimize. It's a problem. A lot of people try to optimize everything in their life. And of course, when you have a possibility to see some feedback of your health, you might over-optimize. But the most important things are still more about not those parameters and everything, but about having a good life, talking a lot to other people, not being lonely. So we should never forget that those are actually the most important things. That's a lot what we forget when we start to over-optimize ourselves. But yeah, it's very individual. So I myself, I love the tool because it slows me down when I tend to overwork myself, or when I get sick, to also slow down. So for me, it's a help. It's always the way you treat those tools. It's like everything in life.
And do you think that the tools that we now have and that can lead to potential better optimization, and at the end of the day, also better health insights? I mean, that's what we ideally would want. But invariably, they come with a cost, and that could lead to widening of, let's say, a gap also in society between those more affluent and those that might not have an opportunity to have, let's say, a watch, a ring, I don't know, an earpiece, an eye patch to measure 50 biomarkers of themselves. They will lead healthier lives. They might get more preventive treatment or more personalized treatment compared to someone who cannot have all of that support, or who lives in a society, and we might be the same way, that doesn't, publicly cover all of that. Do you see sort of like concerns as this develops? Is this really positively going to impact everyone, or more like a smaller group of people?
I really hope at least it will have a positive impact on everyone. For example, I feel that's something we have been thinking about from the beginning, because we have this platform. We think we will have the opportunity to develop devices that, if there was no platform, wouldn't have been possible. So for patient groups where there are only very few patients, especially for diseases where we still have no data, we need a lot of data to do some research. So that would be very helpful. So we are also already thinking about having like a second company that is a GmbH, where we do, based on the platform, development of exactly those devices. So that is maybe our intention to at least give to the people that wouldn't get a device like that in any other way when there's only people looking for the money out of such a device. So I think as a company, you always have this responsibility also that when you get money out of something, like for example, out of the longevity bubble, then you have the opportunity to also give back.
Right.
So maybe that's one of the thing, but still, of course, it's always the case if there are, just look at cars. There are cars that are extremely safe because they have so much technology in it, but they are more for the people that have the money to use them. So I think it's absolutely the same. That shouldn't stop us, of course, from developing these things. Mm-hmm. But also, as I say, with every founder or company, it should also be part that you think about responsibility to give back. But yeah, you cannot make the people do that. I always hope that, especially in healthcare, you meet a lot of founders that have good intentions. So I always hope if the company gets big that the intention stays and that they may maybe try to also give back. And with that way, we can also help those that maybe don't have the opportunity otherwise.
I mean, at the end of the day, that also strongly depends on who has the ownership of that company. Because during the startup phase, I mean, if you need to live also. And, you know, it's not only that. And for some, it's more comfortable than for others. But at the end of the day, there needs to be money put into development, testing, research, and much more. So where does that money come from? Well, eventually it's traded against equity and then it really depends who is on the board. So do you see that with you taking an intentionally slower, we do more ourselves route, you will also preserve more opportunity to really follow your North Star and keep it accessible?
Yeah, that's what we hope. Mm-hmm. So of course, that's also one of the things why we go slower, because now we can work on our aim and there is no one telling you, but you need to do that and that and have that and that outcome now. But yeah, we are also slower, but I really want to keep that North Star to help people. So our aim is help people stay healthy, not only help the rich stay healthy. Yeah. So that's also why we are not so much jumping absolutely on this longevity field, because we heard it a lot. You should just go to longevity. We'll have all the money and everything, which is true. But I don't want to be a longevity company. But I want to be a company that supports people.
Yeah, that it's very nice. And it's lovely that you push for, however unlikely it is as a startup to say we will do, you know, take it all the way on our own, but it's lovely that you try and that you push. It's very cool. So let's maybe jump a little bit into future. Like, what does the future hold for you, for Feel? Like, where are you currently at in your development stage, and what is sort of like the next big thing that you hope to unlock?
Yeah, so where we are at is that we want to have our first product ready at the end of the year. It will be a wellness device, of course. But that also, I have to say, came a lot from talks with different kind of doctors that came to us on fairs. And we talked all that through and they say, do you want to be a medical device? And we said, yes. And they said, but really, you don't need to, just develop the device, give it to me, and I will give it to my patients if it works. I don't care about the certification. And yeah, that's also why we start in the wellness section now, to be on the market a lot earlier, to gain insights on the market. And it will be a sweat monitoring product. And in the next stage, we will work on getting the sweat monitoring certified for medical use. So we are currently looking to have funding from two research projects that go into the medical field for sweat monitoring. One is really early detection of infections and also sepsis detection in that area. We work together with research institutes and university clinics to see if we really can pull this off. And the second one is actually in the femtech section, where we do a home monitoring system for a certain indication that is also based on the sweat monitoring. And so we are already looking for the medical device market because, of course, this is our main aim. This can reach a lot more people than and so step by step, I hope in the next 3 years there might actually already be something almost ready for medical device certification, even ready maybe. So the first testings will be done then.
Nice. That's a great goal. And maybe to put this in perspective with current discussions we have here in Germany. So there is lots of discussions around healthcare reform, which has been pushed through, I think has a lot of backlash to it.
Yeah.
And obviously, especially as we look into you moving into a medical device field, that's one of the key elements you will have to tackle. How do you get it reimbursed so that patients can actually properly use it? Do you think that with discussions as we are currently leading them and the direction that our government is currently taking, that there will be space for more preventive healthcare? Do you see that that's a direction we in Germany, but also in the wider space, are taking more? Or do we continue just saying that, well, let's wait until people are actually sick and then we have to treat them? Because it feels like that's where we are at now.
I really hope that they see that that can't be the right way because costs will explode. I mean, it's not hard to do the math that if we wait for symptoms and for people to get sick, that we cannot handle it. It's not possible. So we definitely need the switch urgently. If I see that in the government right now, to be honest, I don't. But I also don't know what the real plans are. And you never know in which direction they are going. With the current situation that I see, I really don't see that. But in the global direction, I see that there is a shift that everyone in this area is pushing towards it. So there must be this change. Otherwise, everything will fail.
I mean, yes, it's clear. If all charts that you look at just say we have more and more and more healthcare spending, our general populations get older and older and older. And
sicker.
Yes. So, and that's quite clear. And I'm with you that, of course, we can spend hundreds of billions of annually in healthcare spending to treat symptoms, which is sometimes the only thing you can do, or we can try to prevent patients from ever developing them. So,
yeah. We can see that in the cost in Germany. So we have a very expensive healthcare system, but do we really have the healthiest people? I'm not sure about that. And yeah, chronic diseases are spreading fast. So of course we advance in medicine. A lot of people survive their cancer diagnosis, for example. But what we don't really think about is that they are not healthy after that. They often have a chronic illness. A lot of the treatments for cancer, for example, affect the heart. And then people get heart failure. So we have strongly rising heart failure numbers. And these people are very sick and really need support, a lot of support from the healthcare system. At the moment, we are not able to tackle that. So we really need to start the prevention and also have systems that can support the doctors in treating those patients. And that are exactly the systems that we have, because then you have this this help for the person itself and also the direct contact to the doctor to get in touch if something goes wrong. And what always a lot of people don't think about is that then you also focus on the people that need the help. Because, of course, there are also a lot of chronically ill patients that live well, that don't have problems. And at the moment, we are focusing on all of them. And with our systems, we can focus on the ones that really need the help.
You mentioned individualized treatment early on already. And that's not only true for us, like in day-to-day, but also, of course, once you have a disease that you struggle with and you have symptoms, as you highlighted, they can be quite different from patient to patient. And figuring out the differences is still, I mean, that's the key differentiator if you're looking at also especially clinical trials these days. That is so complex because you have such a narrow patient population, because we have more and more markers to identify try to predict who is really going to benefit from it. And the more widespread markers are, the better we can leverage them to predict positive outcomes of treatment, the more tailored, and rather than just in German speak, Gießkanne, so we just spread out all of the, you know, we just give everything and we see what sticks. You know? Let's see if we get there and in which space speed we're getting in. Because one of the key elements we have touched upon several times already today is research. How do we leverage the biomarkers to actually give us proper predictions? And if we are very early still in the field, is there, from your perspective, are the right like research initiatives already ongoing to start using more of that that data that's now available, or is it so early that we don't have enough of that and that needs to be more standardized?
It absolutely depends. So I definitely see a change right now also when we look at the different funding opportunities that we have in Germany, that we of course do a lot of research projects at FIEL, and so we see how the research projects are also evolving, and nowadays it's really focused on actually getting in touch early on with the bee farm, for example, to have a scientific advice that is new, which is really good, and also to really have everything set up for this e-certification. Because a lot of research projects, unfortunately, in Germany still will be stuck after that. Mm-hmm. Because at the end, there is still, it's not advanced enough to really go into a clinical study, for example. Mm. And so a lot of money goes to waste. And so in the change in this research projects, I also see that the opportunities are seen. For example, now there was a call really for disruptive medical sensors.
Mm.
And that is something that gives me the sign, okay, Germany now sees that those are very important technologies and we need to tackle them. If they explicitly say disruptive, because then any incremental innovation will not be accepted in this call. Mm-hmm. And so I really hope that there are some signs that show me things are starting to advance in a certain region.
Now, you mentioned the scientific advice with the BfArM. Are you yourself also looking for structured dialogue? So an opportunity for communication with the notified bodies who eventually approve the medical device, which is, I want to say, more of a novel idea, unfortunately, in Europe after MDR. So this is, I'm assuming, out in the future for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are, of course, trying to get in touch also with the authorities as early as possible. Mm-hmm. It's also not that easy, of course, because, of course, they have other things to do and don't have time to just get into dialogue with startups all the time. But I would actually, if someone would be open, I would love to sit down and talk through how we can make this work in Germany, because it would also benefit research, for example. But yeah, as always, it is hard to find the persons that you can, even for me, I come from clinical research, so they are already certain contact, but it's still hard. Mm-hmm. What I use a lot, of course, is I'm still active in the German Association for Pharmaceutical Medicine, where I have my contacts to also authorities and take part in the conference and so on. And I'm also active as the spokesperson for the digital health working group there. Mm-hmm. And this is where I try to find the right people with whom to get this further on, some people from the regulatory world and so on, and find smart strategies how we can bring this forward also when looking at the regulatory side.
Mm-hmm. And if you could, do you have like a regulatory change in mind that you would enact to really benefit the biosensing space? Would you have one thing which you would say this would make the biggest impact for us and therefore also for future generations with better access to data and better, more tailored treatments?
Yeah, just this opportunity to tests together with patients. I would not say on patients, because sometimes we say it like that, but together with patients as early as possible. First of all, of course, to get the data to see if the whole thing works, but also to get the feedback from the patients that they want. So working closer with patients and not stopping this by bureaucracy. by having a whole documentation ready that is also already for when you need when you have developed the whole product. But you have, of course, shown safety. That is the most important part. The thing is safe for use. And I mean, you see, no patient can die if I put this on him. There is not enough electronics in. So why shouldn't we be able, if we show that it's biocompatible and there is no risk for the general safety, why shouldn't we start to use it more? And that is, at the moment, I think, far too difficult and should be made easier. So some kind of innovation fast track, which is already discussed, would be great.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that's a lovely idea. And I think it is underestimated how many patients out there are willing to put themselves out there, join clinical trials, but even beyond that, be part of research, donate their time, and the knowledge that can be gained from running tests with them to the furtherment of research. And I think picking that up and giving them an opportunity and everyone an opportunity to make that easier, while respecting boundaries and ensuring that everything is done ethically, there must be a way to make that happen. So I, for me, before we sort of close out this conversation, I would be remiss having you here if I didn't touch upon a point which I, it's this that sticks with me a lot, your presentation last year's DG PharmEd, where you also pointed a little bit towards your role and being a female founder, especially in a tech-driven space. I think it's something that we need to talk about more, and I would love to get your perspective. I'm sure as a startup founder, irrespective of gender, you face enough headwind, challenges and everything. But then female founder in a tech-driven space, quite a lot different. What, if you were to summarize your experience, what would you say is, like, how can you know, an inspired young female venture into this journey? What do they need to prepare for, unfortunately?
I have to be honest that I didn't have so many problems like that. I think one thing is that I have a male co-founder that does a lot. Yeah. So if you are only a female team, it's a lot harder. I don't see the struggle so much, because at least I think it's the thing that makes it easier. Then, of course, I am a doctor. That also changes a lot. I know that. What I do a lot is I'm actually more an introverted person. No one really, when I say that, always say, yeah, you're introverted. But I am. It takes, for me, it doesn't give me energy to be on stage, but it takes a lot of energy. But I also know how important it is, because almost every time when I come from stage, there is one young girl coming to me saying, you inspired me a lot. Thank you so much for that. I will also now try to pursue a career in that direction, especially when I get on stage and say, I'm not the one who loves to be up here. I'm more introverted and I do this because we need to do this, and that it inspires a lot of people happily. And yeah, so I always say, just do it. Despite all the things that everyone says about female founders, I always try to just focus on the positive also. And maybe that's also why I simply don't see the negative comments and everything. So that there were some, definitely, especially also in clinical research when I was very young, I already started to be on conferences at the tables, and there were harsh comments. Unnecessary harsh comments. Of course, it were always the male that did those, but maybe I don't care so much. I simply ignore that and focus more on the positive. And then, of course, it's also a lot easier.
Okay. So you can encourage every young, inspiring entrepreneur to say yes, to embark in it. Maybe sometimes you will find headwind, but all in all, it is manageable, and we've changed enough already, or it's moving in the right direction.
Well, yeah, we've changed enough already. I think we just saw in the media with the German Congress for the Dr. the Ärzte Congress, that there were five young women saying which problems they encountered. And I'm very happy that they decided to do this, go on stage and address this, because it is still a problem. So I've also faced this a lot. So also sexism, also the comments. But yeah, I think I simply tend to ignore it, but there's still a whole lot that needs to change, definitely. There's still a community where men push other men to come forward. And I also hear a lot when there are panels. Very often there is a female that does the moderation, but the panel is full of male founders or whatever. And I always say, okay, where are the females? Why didn't you take a female? And they always say, yeah, no one wanted to. I'm pretty sure if you have looked a little bit deeper, you would have found someone, because it's still very often they say, the woman, they don't want to be on stage. And then push them. So it is often that they also in the beginning don't want to, but when they see which effect it has on other women, then they maybe would do it more. And I also see that, for example, in the German Association for Pharmaceutical Medicine, that a lot of the females also told me, I would never go on stage here, because why are you doing that? And I say, because you have to encourage women to have a voice here. The women like to keep in the background, actually, but if we always keep in the background, nothing will change. And now I see the first ones also taking stage despite having the fear or not wanting to be there, but they still do it, and that's really great. So we have to push. There is still a long way to go, because it's simply in the minds. It is set there, and even in the people that think they are very open, sometimes when I talk to them, they say things that at a conference, that's a very good, I was at a conference, that is a story, where I was pretty annoyed, because there was a researcher talking about some research in quantum physics that is associated with diamond structures. And the only thing he had to say about women was how great and shiny his daughter and his women find the topic, and that they were really disappointed when they found out it's not about real diamonds. When I went to him directly after that, because I was really annoyed, I was really angry, and he said he only wanted to be nice. And I thought, but it's not nice at all if the only thing you have to say about women on stage is that they find things are great when they are shiny. So yeah. So it's stories like that really get me angry. Yeah.
And back on stage to change it.
Yeah.
And it's lovely that you do. And I mean, I'm always inspired when you are on stage, and I get
Thank
to see
you.
It. And I know that, and it's lovely hearing that you also get that feedback from other people saying that, yes, this you know, pushes us forward, and that's exactly what we need. And we will always need more of that, more encouragement, hopefully not only from females leading the way, but it's a very effective way of doing so. And thank you for doing that, despite the fact that you don't really enjoy it as much.
I enjoy it now. I think it gets better, but it was a long way to be that confident, really. But now it's a lot nicer. And I'm really happy that there are more and more females taking the same route. So that's great. And thank you for the opportunity to talk about that.
Always. Agnes, anything else that we should talk about that we haven't touched yet that you think is important? I know that's a big field, but...
About the continuous monitoring field or about
anything.
Life?
Yeah, so lots in life.
One thing I always like to say, that in Germany, we need to have more courage to really push forward. There are so many smart people here, and we need to stopping ourselves in the track, but more being really have the courage to start something. We only see how Germany is going down. We could be going up. We just need to push ourselves a little bit more, be a little bit more bold, and especially positive, not the negative thinker, not the Reichsbedenkenträger is a German word, but really be open and positive, focus on the positive things, and then the situation could look a lot different.
That fits perfectly to my very last question. What gives you hope?
What gives me hope? I think, yeah, in the world that we are facing right now, what gives me hope is that people still stick together, and especially in crisis, people start sticking together again and can also change. So I've seen a lot of people that were pretty negative that started to focus on the positives and got really optimistic and positive people that also start to give the spark to everyone else. But because I think when you're really this kind of positive person, you can have the spark to do this in another person. So that gives me hope that people can change and the world is not a bad place to be, but we can all change the place that we are in.
Thank you, Agnes, for being here. Thank you for sharing your journey, for telling us more about Feel, and all the best for the future and your endeavors. I know there's going to be lots of roadblocks ahead of you, and I'm sure you will do very well in managing all of them.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. It was very great to be here. Thank you.